Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered, like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches, but there aren't, right?
Right, because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at carvana.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
This is the Be One Change One podcast, where our mission is to help listeners define values, practice integrity, and inspire change.
Our vision is to mentor men and empower them to achieve more by taking responsibility for shaping their own lives.
He's Cass, an evolving man who has been shaped by adversity and continues to grow through his imperfections.
And he's Roscoe, an imperfect work in progress that tries to suck less every day.
Between us, we have over 40 years of Air Force fighter pilot experience with countless hours as trainers, instructors, and mentors.
Join us and learn to take responsibility for your own life as we dive into subjects from leadership to resilience to vulnerability.
Be the one who changes their course. Be decisive, driven, and purposeful. Set the example for others. Lead. We wish we'd had this show when we were younger men.
Be the one. You ready?
Yeah, dude.
All right. Well, happy New Year, ones.
Happy fucking New Year.
Yeah, man. That's awesome. Hey, we were going to do integrity this week, but Roscoe's all about college football and
best time of the year.
We've
right
been
now.
Watching championship games and stuff. And so we thought that there were some good lessons that could be pulled out of some of the games that have been played, in particular the Georgia Florida State game.
Yeah.
And so we just thought we'd take a pause and have a little bit of a lighter, funner episode and talk about some of the stuff. So I'll let you lead it off, Roscoe, since this is your passion right here.
Yeah, man. This is the best time of year for me because the culmination of watching all these teams just duke it out, and then it all kind of boils to a head. And here we are a week away from the Natty. Actually, it's going to be played the day that or the day after this episode comes out.
Tomorrow
night. And I'm working late shift this week, so I won't even get to watch it real time. I'll have to watch it Tuesday morning.
I'll be in Dallas, but I'll get to watch it.
Barf. So, but yeah, man, to watch these teams and what I really enjoy, I think of in the bowl season is you get to see matchups that you don't normally get to see. Like I'm an SEC fan, man. I'm a Bama fan. I have been my whole life. And it's fun watching Bama play, but it's I get a lot of enjoyment out of watching them play teams out of their conference and all across, you know, because there's good competition in all of the conferences,
yeah.
But not all conferences are exactly the same.
Yeah.
You know, I think you could argue that the Pac-12 is probably not built the same way as the SEC is.
No.
You know, so to see some of these teams and see some of these matchups that you get to see, like the Oregon Liberty game, we kind of knew what that one was going to end up being in the Fiesta Bowl this year.
Yeah.
But hey, man, I mean, Liberty showed up to play. You know, they took a drive, the first drive of the game. They drive right down, score a touchdown, and all the Oregon fans went, "Whoa, what the hell?"
Yeah, well,
you know,
that wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah, Oregon finally got their shit together and played the game the way we thought it was going to play out. But those are the matchups I like to see. So yeah. This has been a lot of fun for me.
Right on. Well, let's talk about the Oregon or not the Oregon, but the Georgia and Florida State game.
Yeah.
So here's a little background for you, ones. I'm an NFL fan. I don't follow college very closely. Probably because I didn't have a real college experience. And like you growing up in Alabama, yeah. there's, you know, like the Seahawks were the big thing for us, right? Yeah. I mean, the Huskies were too, especially in the 90s. They had those great teams under Don James. And I went to the University of Washington, so I'm obviously rooting yeah. for the Dogs. But I wasn't, you know, my college experience wasn't going to every game on Saturday because I'm yeah. at school. Like, I worked my way through college. I was going at night, that kind of thing. So I guess college just never stuck with me as to the level that it has with you. But I was sitting at home, and Roscoe shoots me this text, and he's like, "Cash, you got to watch these two post-game interviews between, yeah. you know, Kirby Smart and I'm going to say
Mike Norvell.
Norvell.
Yeah.
And Mike Norvell." And I'm like, okay, so I watch him. And man, there were some good, I mean, it was funny. They were yeah. about 22, 24 minute clips, post-game pressers. But man, especially with all of the things that you and I have been exposed to from a mm-hmm. leadership perspective and culture perspective and performance and competition.
Yeah.
Man, there were just some super glaring differences between those two press conferences. Now, some of that may have been environmental, right? Because one team had just completely devastated yeah, the other exactly, team by 60
yeah.
points.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of things that weren't that way, right? There yeah. were a lot of things that were very evident of the differences in what Coach Smart's built from a culture perspective yeah. and the buy-in that he has from his players, as opposed to what you saw on the Florida State side. So I'll turn it over to you.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to talk the whole time, but I think you're right, man. I think there's some things that we can take away from there. And just as, you know, kind of a PSA up front, I don't want this to turn into a referendum against FSU yeah, or no, their no, coach no. and their, you know, hopefully there's not going to be any vicious personal attacks or anything like that. We just want to, just like we do as fighter pilots, man, we're going to debrief it a little bit.
Yeah.
We're going to take out some objective, maybe subjective here and there, but some lessons learned from it so that we can apply to it to, in the next iteration, you know, and bring it back to the things that we talk about on the Be One Change One podcast yeah. about, it's all about mindset, man, and how you carry yourself and your character and all of those things. They kind of squish all together to identify you as a person. And I would argue that a football team, especially at that level, those things magnify into that team has an identity.
Yeah.
And I think that trickles down from the AD, maybe definitely from the head coach. And we can go through and we can pick some of that stuff out. And I remember, for the listeners, if you haven't seen the movie, Remember the Titans, it's one of my favorite. We watch it every football season, probably more than once. It's always usually on a Saturday afternoon on USA or something like that. But there's a point in that movie where, and this was back in like the 60s, 70s, back when racial segregation was kind of boiling to a head, and they hire T.C. Williams in Virginia or West Virginia, one of the two. They hire this black coach, Coach Boone, and he comes in and he says, "I don't care what color your skin is, defensive players on that bus, offensive players on that bus." Well, the players, they still had a lot of friction between each other. So Coach Boone went a step further and he says, "All right, everybody on the team is going to go to every single other person on the team, starting with your roommate, and you're going to come back and report to me three things that you learned from that person." And so this goes on after, you know, a week or two after, while they're in camp or whatever. And so two of the defensive stars, white guy and a black guy, are arguing one day. They're duking it out. And the white guy turns around and goes, "God, dude, you are such a waste of talent because of your attitude. You go out there and you half-ass and you just kind of piss around the field and you could be great, man." And the black dude looks right at him and goes, "Attitude reflects leadership, Captain." And that's kind of the meat of where I want to go with this discussion, or where I think it's probably going to go, is from the leadership, from the top down. It doesn't matter if you're a nationally ranked college football team or if you're just working selling used cars.
Yeah.
The leadership from the top down can set the attitude for the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, and I think some of the things that are transferable and the bits that we're going to talk about here too are, if you're in a leadership position, and or maybe, you know, you're part of or just recently put in charge of a new team, like, dude, there's a way to build culture. There's a way yeah. to build intensity and brotherhood and community where people will really start to work for each other instead of just work for themselves.
Yeah.
And there's one thing in particular that is very glaring in that separation between Georgia and Florida State.
Yeah.
So you were telling me.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Me, and I'll just start here if you're okay with that.
Yeah, go for it.
You know, I know Florida State had their struggles this year, and a lot of this will be objective to me because I don't know anything about either one of these teams for the most part. But
awesome.
You know, one thing that was really interesting to me was, so I know Florida State was in the conversation to be in the championship for quite a while. They had some injuries. I know they lost their quarterback towards the end of the season.
Yeah. Jordan Travis.
You know, they had a lot of really good players, but you were telling me like 20 of their 22 starters elected not to play.
They were either injured and elected to have surgery, entered the portal, or didn't play. And I think I read that 12 of them opted out.
Yeah.
So, so they chose not to play in the game.
Yeah, well, that and that speaks to culture, right? So, because one of the things that stuck out to me in the Georgia interview, well, there were several things, but one of the first thing that stuck out, not the first thing, but the, one of the things that along the lines of this conversation that stuck out to me was they were talking, one of the players that up there was a senior. So this is his last game that he's going to play at Georgia. Yep. You know, and Georgia's the same way as Florida State, right? They're on the outside looking into the championship and arguably could have been in the championship, maybe ahead of Florida for sure. But, you know, the players on Georgia, this one kid in particular said, because they asked him about that. They asked him that particular question, why did you play? You know, I'm sure this kid's getting ready to go into the draft. Obviously, you know, if you're not playing for a championship, and you're getting ready to step into your next career, why would you run the risk of injuring yourself?
Yeah.
And his comment was, there's no way that I was going to abandon my brothers on that field. There's no way that I wasn't going to show up and play. There's a game to be played. We compete every day.
That's right.
You know, the focus is on winning.
Yeah.
And you win by showing up and putting in the work and playing with your team, you know? And so that right there is just shows me a huge difference between the two cultures that exist between those two programs.
Yeah. Well, he said, look, there was a football game to be played and we win football games at Georgia. And that's a mindset, dude.
Yeah.
That's like, you're completely brainwashed and bought into the process and the program at that point. So what you were saying there, let's just kind of back in time real quick. And let's talk about how did we get to the Florida or the FSU UGA matchup to begin with. Right. So Florida State, they run the table this year in the ACC. They're 13-0. They won the ACC championship. Georgia lost to Bama by a field goal in the SEC championship. So Bama's SEC champions with one loss. Georgia is no conference championship with one loss. FSU is sitting there 13-0, won their Power 5 conference, 13-0 undefeated, right? So now there's this big discussion about who gets in. I think 1 and 2, Michigan and Washington, those are gimmies, right? Pac-12 champion undefeated and Big Ten champion undefeated. All right, you're in. So then it comes down to Texas getting the number 3 spot and then Bama, Georgia, and FSU for that 4th spot. I think Texas beat Bama earlier in the season and they were Big 12 champions. So it's kind of hard to leave those guys out, right?
Yeah.
So you put them in the number 3 spot ahead of whomever else. And so now it comes down to Georgia, FSU, Bama, right? Well, Bama had just beaten Georgia. So you can't put Georgia in again ahead of Bama, right?
Yeah.
So they're kind of out of the discussion. So now it's down between FSU and Bama. And I pulled up some stats here that I want to throw out for our non-football listeners and people who don't follow this as closely as maybe some of us do. But when that quarterback for FSU got hurt, he got hurt towards the end of the season. They played 3 games after he got injured, all right? So all the way up to, I think it was game 10, things are clicking, and they are, no kidding, man. I mean, they're running the table. They're doing very well, and they're one of the best teams in the country. So the stats don't lie. Up to that point where he got injured, the offense, the passing offense, was averaging 289 yards and 2.45 touchdowns per game. That's just the passing side of it. The rushing side of it, 162 yards and 2.54 touchdowns per game. Like, they're killing it, man.
Yeah, that's complimentary football.
Those are really good offensive stats, right? Yeah. After that dude gets injured, the offense, the passing offense, 111 yards per game, zero touchdowns. In three games, zero touchdowns. And the rushing offense, 106 yards and 1.3 touchdowns per game, right? So that one player going out affects the entire organization, because now if I'm the opponent, if I'm going in to face FSU, I game plan differently because you don't have your star quarterback.
Yeah,
I can load the box and stop the run because I know you can't throw it.
Yeah.
You know, and the proof is in the stats, right? When you go to, what did I say, a 62% reduction in your offensive capacity by losing one player, you are not the same team.
Yeah,
man.
You're not.
I'm sorry. And I know that Florida State fans, you know, you guys are gonna hate on us and send us all this hate mail. That's fine. We'll take it. But the stats don't lie.
Yeah.
All right. And I really think that the College Football Committee, when they sat around to figure out who the top four teams are, they had to have a discussion on who deserves to be in versus who are the four best teams. Now, you could absolutely argue that Georgia is in that discussion.
Yeah.
You play that Bama-Georgia game 10 times, Georgia probably wins 6 or 7 of them. Bama just had their number that day.
Yeah.
All right. And, you know, that's why you play the game. And this is going to be another argument for the Florida State fans going, well, why'd we play all these 13 games if we didn't get in? The games don't matter. Yeah. Okay. I'll take that. That's great. But are you, as you stand on December 3rd or whenever the selection was, are you one of the four best teams in the country? The answer is no. Sorry. So Bama gets in, and now there's a lot of hate flowing around and a lot of, well, this is karma because Texas and Bama lost in the first round of the playoffs, right? Texas loses to Washington. Bama loses to Michigan in the Rose Bowl.
In overtime.
But see, that's the thing that people are missing. They're saying, well, that's karma. Okay, Michigan has the number one defense in the country, and they're ranked number one in the country, right? And Bama gets in as a one-loss SEC champion, and they went to overtime and lost on the last play of the game, right? That game, I've watched it twice. I was there, and I watched it on replay on ESPN. That game came down to like 2 or 3 plays.
Man. Yeah.
The ball bounces a different way on a couple of plays, and that's a different ball game, and you're looking at a UW-Bama championship instead, because Bama was winning that game up until 4 minutes and 41 seconds left in the fourth quarter. And then they got stuffed on, or they let them get a first down on the 4th and 2, and that kind of changed the momentum of the game.
Yeah.
Texas and Washington goes down to the last freaking play of the game, man. So how can you sit there and argue that Bama and Texas didn't deserve to be there when, man, I mean, they had a legit, we were that close to seeing a Bama-Texas rematch for the national championship.
Yeah.
I don't think Florida State could have hung in there like that.
Yeah, probably not. Not without that quarterback that they had earlier in the season.
As their team sat on December 3rd on Selection Sunday, I don't think that they could have competed at that level.
Yeah. Well, I think what's more interesting, though, too, is, you know, when you have an injury like that, or, you know, it's even translatable to business or something else. You know, you have a team member that's maybe a star team member that moves on to another job. Maybe it's within the company or goes somewhere else to make more money or whatever the case may be. And now you've got this whole, how do you motivate? Right. So, from Florida State's leadership perspective, how do you motivate folks to stay engaged? And, you know, how do you make adjustments to try to find other strengths that you can play to, you know, instead of just having one big glaring weakness now kind of drive everything for you?
Yeah.
And how do you rally the troops around that? I think that's a tough thing to do, right?
It is.
But it's something that it's a transition that every organization goes through.
But you know what? Next man up, right?
Yeah.
That next man up theory, when that quarterback goes down, QB2, hey, it's your time, man.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
let's go. Let's play football. This is what you've been training for your entire life. You've been playing football since you were 5 or 6 years old, and now you got your shot.
Yeah.
And you go out there and throw for 111 yards a game and zero touchdowns. You didn't perform, man.
Yeah.
Sorry. You know, and that was when they had their full complement. So you get into the Georgia game. Well, let's go back to Selection Sunday when they had cameras on Michigan when the announcement was made that Bama was going to be in the four position. And every head in that auditorium just went, oh, because they knew if they played FSU, that's a free ticket to the Natty.
Yeah.
Right. Well, now they actually got to earn it. And they were a couple of plays away from not going for the third time. Right. So, and then you kind of watch the reactions from the jump. Like when they interviewed all the coaches, they interviewed the first four first, and then they went and interviewed Mike Norvell. And in that moment, he was complaining, he was whining, he was kind of pouting and pitching a fit like a schoolgirl. And I think that, I mean, this is just my gut and my impression. I think that that went on for a long time, maybe a week, maybe 10 days. And that attitude matriculated down to the players, and that's why they end up opting out.
Yeah.
Because he, as the head coach, as the leader of the organization, he presented himself as, well, this doesn't matter. And then the players take on that attitude. And
yeah, so I think one of the things, watching those two interviews back to back, one of the first things that really stuck out to me was, and again, this could be, some of it could be situational, right? Because one team just blew the other team out.
That's valid.
But let's say both of them are roughly 24 minutes long. In the Georgia interview, I think Coach Smart maybe talks for four of that 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And in the Florida State interview, I think Coach Norwell talks for 20 of the 24 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, now maybe some of that is him protecting his players because they're upset about the performance.
That's true. Yeah.
Right. So I'm not throwing spears at that. But one thing that was really interesting to me was when they started talking to Florida State's coach, he didn't really talk about how they got there so much. I mean, it was, I'm not going to say that he was making excuses, but you could tell that there was like the underlying current of his conversation was, hey, we faced a lot of adversity this year. We had a lot of issues coming into this game and we did the best that we could. That was kind of what it was.
Yeah.
You know, he reflected a lot on the injuries and the adversity that they had in the last couple of weeks. And versus talking about like who they were and what the program was about and where they were going to go from here. You know, like he talked about it being a special place, but he doesn't explain how it's special.
Yeah. Well, let me read you the exact quote out of that. I typed it up. This is from Coach Norvell in his post-game presser after the Orange Bowl. He says, there are going to be times in life when you do everything right and it doesn't go your way. Maybe, I guess I mistyped that. Maybe you're not chosen where you wanted to be chosen. Maybe you're not selected. Maybe you find some unexpected adversity. So far, so good, right? I'm liking this. But it's the response that's going to showcase your identity and what you're about. And these guys have responded. He was referring to his team. These guys have responded. They've learned a lot of great lessons they will carry for the rest of their lives. We had an opportunity to compete, and we came and competed. Bro, did you look at the scoreboard?
Yeah, right.
Like, it was 63-3. You lost by 60 points in the Orange Bowl, and you're arguing that you should be one of the top four teams?
And 10 of your 12 best players didn't even bother to show up?
We could definitely make some arguments here against everything that you just said. And if you're going to stand by your words, but it's the response that's going to showcase your identity and what you're about, that's kind of the highlight of that whole snippet right there.
Yeah.
Dude, your response was not awesome.
No, it wasn't.
It was not awesome.
You know, and what was interesting about the flip side of that from the Georgia perspective was listening to the players respond to questions, like, you could see the culture that Coach Smart has built, right? Because it was all about, why does the game matter? Well, the game matters because winning matters, and we're going to compete every day because it matters, right? We're going to show up. We're competitors. We play for each other. We don't take it for granted. You know, we're fortunate that we're able to play at this level. So if there's a game to be played, we're going to be there and we're going to play. We don't abandon each other. This team is a family. It's a real brotherhood. There's connection, right? There's all of, they believe in each other. I even wrote here watching it, I'm like, the coach isn't even answering questions and he doesn't have to because the players are showing the kind of culture that's been built.
Yeah, that's on the Georgia side, right?
Yeah, on the Georgia side. You know, and they're talking about the work ethic and how the job's not done and every day is important.
Yeah.
You know, and they set a standard to create, they set a standard for themselves that propels them towards success. And, and they uphold that standard for each other. That it's not just the coaches upholding the standard. You could tell the two guys that were up there, Kendall and Kamare, you could tell that those guys hold other players accountable. Right. Where's the accountability on the Florida State side when there's a bunch of your players that don't even bother to show up for the game?
Dude, I watched this documentary. It's a series, a docuseries on ESPN Plus called Man in the Arena. It's all about Tom Brady from when he was in Michigan playing ball up into the NFL. Drew Bledsoe goes down, he gets his shot, right? And then the rest is kind of history, right? So, but there was a season in there, and I can't remember exactly which one it was. I want to say it was maybe the 17 or 18 season, somewhere in there, where he said that they came in on like day one of practice and they called themselves the Edgers because everybody in that locker room was trying to one-up the other guy. And that's the friendly competition that you want to see between players. Like, oh, well, you did 20 reps at 225. I'm going to do 21 at 225, you know, or you're going to come in 5 minutes early. I'm going to come in 15 minutes early. And that mentality just, I mean, it held everybody accountable.
Yeah.
And it's really almost like an internal thing to the individuals. Because you don't have to, like, you don't need a direction to do this stuff. You look at it and you go, well, fuck, Cass gets up at 5:30 in the morning. I'm going to get up at 5:28. I'm going to be outside his front door with my running shoes on when he's in there having his coffee. You know, that's the kind of attitude that you see out of the Georgias and the Bamas and those kind of big, just perennial powerhouse players or football teams. And then you got this Florida State team that, man, they had a great season. And I don't want to take anything away from those dudes. They played their asses off. They won 13 games. They won the ACC. But they had an opportunity there. They could have gone 14-0. Very, very few teams have done that. And won the Orange Bowl, man. The Orange Bowl has been played since 1902. I mean, this is historic. You could have gone undefeated and won the Orange Bowl against Georgia, who has been ranked number one the entire season, save for that loss to Alabama.
Yeah, well, and again, just back to the accountability piece, and I'm not throwing spears. I don't know who the players are. I don't know what the injuries were. You know, I'm not playing through a bum knee, you know, at that level or anything like that. There might have been legitimate reasons why some of those players opted to go ahead and have surgery, maybe the recovery so they'd be ready for next season.
Yeah.
Right? There's all kinds of things that go into that. So I'm not throwing spears by any stretch of the imagination. But me personally, if I was in a position like that and I could play football, I would show up and play football. Because one, that's what I signed up to do.
That's right. You finish what you start.
Two, my teammates are counting on me to be there, right? I have a responsibility to my team and to the dudes that I play with to show up and give it my best, right? And three, you're missing, like you said, whether you're a freshman, sophomore, junior, or senior, this may be the last chance you get to win a bowl game. Because you don't know what next season's going to look like.
You have no idea.
You know, and this might be, so do you want to go out having been an Orange Bowl winner in one season? Yeah. You could say, yeah, dude, we won the Orange Bowl in 2023 against Georgia. It was an awesome game, you know?
Yeah.
Or do you want to, and so it was just, and that was such a huge, there was just such a huge apparent discrepancy for me between, because Georgia's in the same position to a certain extent. I know they weren't maybe
they were unhappy as hell, man. They thought they should have been one of the top four
they're
teams.
On the outside looking in. But those dudes showed up and played. Right, because there's that a personal accountability. Mm-hmm. There's that accountability to your teammates, the brotherhood that the players talked about. You know, that stuff is so important.
Well, that's almost the same. Well, a comparable scenario played itself out last year where Alabama was number five after on Selection Sunday. They came out as number five. Now they were a two loss team, not an undefeated Power Five champion, but they were on the outside looking in. And they played the Sugar Bowl that year. They got selected for a New Year's Six Bowl. They played the Sugar Bowl, and all of their players showed up.
Yeah.
Three first-round picks, three second-round picks. They all showed up, and they whipped the crap out of Kansas State.
Well, and like we talk about this on the podcast, right? Like how you show up is important.
That's like right.
Like how you represent yourself day to day is important, and that consistency in that is important.
Yeah.
And like I said, one of the things that stuck with me out of the Georgia players was them talking about how every day is important, right?
Every day.
Every day is an
Everything
opportunity
you do.
To show success. Every day is an opportunity. So let's talk about that for a second, right? Because the draft is going to come up in whatever it is, March or April for the NFL. Well, what if you're one of those Florida State players on defense who chose not to play, and let's just say for argument's sake, you're a DB, and you miss an opportunity to showcase your talents to all those scouts out there. And not to say that that would have changed your draft stock per se, but what if you go out there against Georgia, who most people would consider to be, you know, obviously a top five team in college football, and you had two or three interceptions? You don't think that wouldn't have changed? What if there was one guy on one team at the NFL level that was kind of teetering on the difference between you and another player?
Yep.
You don't think that decision or a coach on that team
is going to
look
stuff.
At that decision and go, well, homeboy on Georgia showed up as a senior and played. This guy didn't show up for... Is that the kind of guy that is that the culture we have here on our team at this NFL level?
How many players go into the NFL draft and don't get drafted because of things like attitude?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, think of all of the interview process and all of the things that those background stuff that those guys go into to figure out. I mean, there's so much of being a Seahawks fan. I know this because Pete Carroll talks about it all the time, but there's so much that goes into, is this guy going to fit our culture, right? Is this guy, does he have the personality, the work ethic, the commitment, the drive?
You
think by not showing up to prevent the potential of injury, some of those guys probably tubed themselves in the eyes of certain scouts or certain coaches out there, where there may have been a, you know, 1-2 kind of choice between, hey man, if we get in the second round, it's between these two players, who are we going to go with? Well, guess what? One dude stock rise just went up, and one guy's just went down. So my point in saying that is, guys, it matters. Like, how you show up and how you show out on a day-to-day basis. People, we talk about this on the podcast. People watch that stuff.
People see it.
People pay attention. You may not think they pay attention, you know, and you may be able to convince yourself that you've got really good reasons as to why you're doing X, Y, or Z, but people are watching.
I had this exact same conversation with Caleb when he went to Embry-Riddle and joined ROTC. I sat him down and we had almost this exact same talk. I'm like, dude, everything you do matters. When a person walks into the room, you stand up, you walk over and you shake their hands, or do you sit over in the corner and play on your phone, right? And here's the thing, man, this is reality. And we've seen this over and over in our careers, right? You got two guys side by side who on paper are almost
identical.
They're
chicken beef, same.
Exactly. Yeah. They're almost identical. Somewhere in there is going to be a discriminator between those two. And it could come down to something like when he passes the commander in the hallway, he says, good morning, sir, and the other guy doesn't.
Yeah.
It could be something that simple.
A lot of time it comes down to attitude and ethic, work ethic.
And that's it. And that's just how you carry yourself every day, man. Yep. And that's why we wanted to use this example as a good kind of a focal point to have these kinds of discussions. Yeah. And here comes that big old nod again.
Yeah. But, and again, I'm not bashing Florida State or any of the decisions that those players made that they thought were the best for them. I'm just in generality talking about, you know, objectively how those things can be perceived.
No, I'm 100% on your side.
Way. Well, and the other thing that stuck out to me in the interview process too was they asked Coach Smart on the Georgia side at one point about one of the guys that is like one of their special team stars, and I don't remember his name. But they were like, you know, I guess he had a couple of big plays in this bowl game. And Coach Smart's like, they were like, you know, they were asking him, you know, how does he do that? You know, what's the deal? He goes, yeah. And his response was basically, you know, yeah, how does that guy beat some five-star recruit downfield? And he goes, because he wants to.
That's right.
He goes, he cares. It's important to him.
That was a great point.
You know? And when he said that, I'm like, there's the culture.
That's the mentality.
Right there, right? Yeah. That's the mentality. I'm going to win. I want this more than you.
Yeah.
I'm going to beat you today.
That's so good.
I'm going to win my one-on-one assignment. I don't care if you're a five-star recruit and I was a three-star recruit.
Yeah.
Dude, this is my job, and I'm going to do it better than you.
Have you read the book Relentless by Tim Grover?
Well, hold on. Before we go down that road, let me just finish this train of thought so I don't lose it.
No, yeah.
Because I'm getting old. compare that and that mentality to we're not in the championship round. I'm not going to show up.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? That's the difference in the culture right there to me.
Well, but who starts that culture? Who starts that conversation?
Well, it's the coach.
It's the head coach.
It starts with the coach.
It's the head coach. Exactly. And Mike Norvell, I'm sure you're a great dude.
Yeah.
I'd love to shake your hand one day and have a conversation with you.
You've had great success to this point.
He's a younger coach. But look at the different, look at the different paths that both of these coaches have taken to get to where they're at. I'm a Bama fan. Nick Saban is one of the best team builders in the history of,
college football.
In the history of team building. He is a great team builder because he convinces people to buy in 100% to the process. And I think he's got a great message. And you guys can make your own determinations on that. Kirby Smart coached under him for a long, long time, was his defensive coordinator, won a bunch of national championships. He understands what it takes to build a championship culture based on the way Nick Saban does it. Steve Sarkisian, the head coach out at Texas, same exact thing. The guy gets booted from USC for being drunk and disorderly, basically. And Saban calls him up and says, hey, man, you want to be an offensive analyst on Bama? So you go from head coach at USC to being an offensive analyst at Alabama. They won a national championship. The next year, the guy gets bumped up to be the OC, and now he's the head coach at Texas, right? So these are this is a coaching pedigree that comes from a very long history of winning and being at that level of championships. And Kirby Smart took it, and he's gone in just a few short years. He's built that at Georgia versus a Mike Norvell, who coached out at Arizona State for a little bit. I mean, he was under some good coaches out there, I think. Got a head coaching job at Memphis, did well. Coached there for 3 or 4 years, took him from being a sub-500 to a 500 to a winning championship-level team in the group of five. But this is something that stood out to me, right? When I was reading his history, Mike Norvell, his last season at Memphis, they won the group of five championship. I forget exactly how it's titled, but he wins that, right? They're like 11-2 or something like that. Really good season, really good season, big ass trophy, right? And they were the highest ranking group of five team that year. Got selected for a New Year's Six Bowl to go play in the Sugar Bowl against Penn State, right? The day after that selection was made, that dude bails and goes to Florida State. You couldn't stick around another 3 or 4 weeks and go take your team that you just put in all this blood, sweat, and tears, and you couldn't take them to that Sugar Bowl and compete for a Sugar Bowl trophy as a group of five? Dude, do you know how huge that would be for that school?
Yeah.
I mean, not just money, but just the pride and the notoriety that comes along with that.
Well, then what's the message to your players when you do something like that too, right?
Yeah. Oh, I got a better deal over here. Let me go take that.
I got a better deal.
Come
I'm out.
On, man.
So it's I guess it's not surprising if that's the mentality that players at FSU would go, well, I got a better deal by not playing this game, so I'm going to sit it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I don't know what was, I mean,
and I don't
obviously
know.
We're not getting into the business. Yeah, we're not getting into the business side of football at all. And I'm sure that there was some more business. And I know December is a heavy time of the year for recruiting and being on the road, talking to people. And I get that. It's super busy.
But yeah.
Come on, man. You couldn't have delegated that maybe to somebody else or something.
Well, again, it's accountability and commitment to the team that you're with at the time. But, you know, who knows? I don't know what the extenuating circumstances would. But one thing that you said, which I think is important about, you know, Kirby Smart coming from the Saban tree and things like that is we talk a lot about mentorship on this podcast and the importance of mentorship.
Oh, hell yeah.
You don't think that Kirby Smart didn't learn, you know, as much as he could from Nick Saban in the time that he spent as his DC, not just about the game of football, but how to build a culture,
how to
build an organization,
how to lead,
how to recruit, how to motivate, you know, all of those things. And you see it translate now, right? Like we've talked about this, the people that you surround yourself with personally and professionally can make a huge difference and impact on outcomes for you.
Go look at the post-game pressers from the SEC championship this year. Alabama versus Georgia. Nick Saban beats Kirby Smart by a field goal, right? Go watch the post-game pressers in that one. Kirby Smart just lost the SEC championship. He's been undefeated and ranked number one all season long. He probably knows that he's not going to get into the CFP this year just based on optics, right? The first 3 or 4 minutes of that presser, Kirby Smart is nothing but congratulatory to the SEC, to the SEC championship and who put it on, to Alabama and their culture and their coach. I mean, go, and then you compare that when you go to the Orange Bowl and watching Norvell and Smart and theirs, the first two minutes or so is Kirby Smart talking about how awesome it was to have the opportunity to play in the Orange Bowl. I mean, the Orange Bowl, it's, look at this, man. Yeah. Look at the venue. Look at the things that these people did and all the money that was spent to make the players look awesome and the field and the stadium and the whole experience was just great. He was nothing but congratulatory and thankful and grateful to have played in the Orange Bowl. Mike Norvell didn't even mention it.
Yeah.
Didn't even bring it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. His first statement out of the gate was, well, you know, yeah, we're kind of disappointed in the outcome. Instead of being grateful for the opportunity, he was focused on the outcome.
Yeah, I think one of his first statements was that he was really proud of the team because they were pushing a 2.95 GPA for the average. And I'm like, really, yeah. Dude? Come on.
Well, that's average for the whole organization.
Yeah.
You know, you saw the stats that I added to the note sheet there. Yeah. Georgia was only a little bit above that.
3.2.
Yeah.
Anyways, I just thought it was funny.
I wanted to go back to, I'd mentioned the book Relentless by Tim Grover.
Yeah.
So Tim Grover was, he was the trainer for Jordan, Kobe, D-Wade, a bunch of these like NBA champions, right? And a bunch of others. But he goes into, in that book Relentless, he goes into great detail of what it takes to be a champion and play at the levels that those guys played at, the Jordans, the Kobes, the Wades, all those. And after reading the book, I mean, I took a whole bunch of notes, man. I highlighted a whole bunch of shit in there. And then I sat down with my notebook and I was just brainstorming some stuff and thinking about kind of, you know, how can you coalesce all this down into something that's digestible? And I took away, I kind of came up with a little bit of a formula on what it takes to be a champion. Just pluses and minuses, right? Desire, discipline, and commitment. And then you look at the FSU Georgia pressers and apply that formula to them, and it's clear. It's clear that Georgia has all of those components and FSU doesn't. Specifically looking at the commitment piece of it.
Yeah.
I mean, just take that part of the equation out and it's not the same. They're not apples and apples, man.
Yeah. Well, and I think part of that too, and you know, obviously Kirby's been there longer, so maybe he's just had more of an opportunity to build that culture to this point.
That's true.
In Norwell's defense. He's
been there a couple years longer.
But at the end of the day, you guys, if you want to build culture in an organization, the first thing you have to do is you've got to get people to trust you. You've got to get people to trust you and your vision, and you do that by wins helps, mm-hmm. right? When you start seeing wins, then people start to buy into the process. But you also do that by, I think, being authentic and transparent in your leadership style, right? So being open and honest with people, you know, and when you're having team meetings going, hey guys, here's what we're up against. We need to figure out what we're going to do. And maybe this doesn't happen at the player level, but definitely should happen at the coach level. I'm all ears. What do you guys got? Yeah. What are your ideas, right? What's the best way to attack this problem? You know, one of the things that I found very valuable as a leader at times was to, sometimes you got to sit down and let there be the airing of the grievances amongst folks, right?
Yeah.
And just let people get stuff off their chest.
Yeah.
With some balance to it. But the other thing that you've got to be able to do too, sometimes is show up and go, hey, I've got an idea. I don't know if it's the best idea. Like, I'm not sure. Yeah. Like, this isn't really my wheelhouse. So who here has dealt with this or done this and has some experience with this? And what are your guys' thoughts around it, right? And try to get that feedback.
Yeah.
Because that's how you'll build trust. And if you start to build trust with people, then they'll start to buy into that process. Because one, if you're taking that feedback and then you're actually executing on that feedback, well, guess what? They are part of the process,
yeah.
Right? Like their ideas are
you part. You just created buy-in.
Yeah, you're creating buy-in that's into right. that culture. And so those are ways that you can do that.
Yeah.
And it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight, right? Sometimes those culture shifts, they take a while.
Yeah.
It takes a while for that messaging to sink in. It takes a while for people. And sometimes it just takes people a while to trust you. Like, I remember when we got to the 425th, you remember Mr. Cooper?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had a gentleman who had been a 20 plus year maintenance officer in the Air Force, and then retired as a civilian. And we had a lot of civilians in the 425th because obviously it's a Singapore squadron. Yeah. So they needed additional support. And he was kind of the head civilian over the maintenance division of the squadron. Hated pilots. Absolutely hated pilots.
Hashtag not a pilot.
Yeah, just saying. He did. And, you know, in his defense, in the time frame that he grew up in the Air Force, you know, he'd seen some bad stuff.
Yeah.
Not guys necessarily doing bad things, but just from like a promotional standpoint and stuff like that. Like, he was back in the 80s and stuff where he could work his butt off all he wanted. He wasn't gonna peak lieutenant colonel, right? Where you could be a shitty fighter pilot and you were gonna make lieutenant colonel no problem, right? And so, you know, he just saw those things, and I think it gave him a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, and he didn't trust pilots. So I get to the squadron as a commander, and my first couple interactions with him, not good. One in particular was, I'm trying to get my arms around everything, and I'm trying to get everybody on the same sheet of music, right? And so underneath him were like three other civilian guys that were in different divisions of supply guy. One was the line, you know. I had like three other guys that were kind of underneath him that were the managers of everything. So I set up this meeting, bring everybody in, RSAF, maintenance, Mr. Cooper, and then he's supposed to have his three guys there. He walks in. I'm sitting there. None of the other guys come. And so I look at him and I go, hey, where's, you know, so-and-so. He's like, oh, I told him not to come. He goes, I can pass on any words that you have.
Why'd you do that?
And I go, okay. And I go, can everybody give me the room for a second? I need to talk to Mr. Cooper. So they all leave. Him and I are sitting there, and I go, go get him. And he goes, why? And I go, because I'm the commander, and I want him in the room because I want to make sure that everybody hears what I have to say and that there isn't any miscommunication. We're all on the same sheet of music. So he begrudgingly goes, gets him. We have this meeting. When the meeting's over, I go down to his office, and I sit down, and I go, look, dude, I go, I get it. You don't trust pilots. I go, there's a huge trust deficit that exists between you and I right now. And I go, I am not here to change how you're doing anything. I said, I'm here to help you. My job as the commander is to make sure that you have everything you need for your guys to do what they need to do to keep these jets flying. That's it. I said, I don't know how to do maintenance. I'm not a maintenance officer, man. I'm like, I'm not here to get in your chili. And I wouldn't say he shifted right away from that conversation, but from then on, every time I had an opportunity to build rapport and trust with him, I made it a point. Like, I used to go down there and walk through all the maintenance shops, you know, and talk to everybody and shake hands and check in with dudes and stuff like that. So my point in saying all of this is that's how you build trust with people, right? Like, just be transparent and be open and be honest and go, look, man, and then work with them. You know, and keep working with him. And eventually you'll build trust. And that goes to when I left, he actually came up to me at my at the change of command. And he's like, one of the top two commanders I've ever worked for.
Nice.
You know, so we were able to figure it out in the course of that 2 years.
Well, but that's a big takeaway from that too, is, you know, going back to the kind of the B1 change one stuff is it takes time.
It does.
It takes time, takes effort. Maybe take some compromise here and there or some concession on occasion, you know, and this is all good. Like the total discussion here that we're having, I'm so glad that we're doing this following the episode that we put out last week. And the first thing Friday, the first question was all about how do you move on from your passion?
Yeah.
Right. Well, look at the way that the Florida State players handled that versus the way that the Georgia players handled it. You know, some of those kids, And let's not just pass over the fact. Let's not just glaze over the idea that these are kids, right? They're 18 to 22, 23 years old. They're kids. They're extremely moldable. And a lot of them have probably been playing football and invested a significant amount of their life to this sport.
Energy and effort, for right? sure, yeah.
And, man, they were dealt a shitty hand there at the end. Sorry, dude. But there was this, there's this quote, gosh, Bobby something, I can't remember. He's a pro golfer, and I love this quote. He says, golf is probably the closest thing to the game of life that you'll get in comparison to a sport, because sometimes you get good breaks from bad shots. Sometimes you get bad breaks from good shots. But either way, you got to play it where it lies.
Yeah.
And I love that, man, because, dude, shit's not going to work your way a lot of times, right? Man.
It's how do you respond to that?
That's right. Your response. And Norvell even says it in his presser. He said the right words. He just didn't do the right actions. And what do we talk about on the podcast all the time, man? It's your behavior. It's how you act. It's what you do. It's not what you say. It's what you do. And his actions did not match his words.
Yeah, you're gonna take the losses. You're gonna get L's, 100%. Right? You're gonna fail. But it's how you respond to that really is the metal of who you are and how you're going to come out of that the other side, and the opportunities that are going to be in front of you on the other side versus just folding up tent and going, well, this is bullshit and we didn't get a fair shake, and so I'm out.
Well, unfortunately, and this is probably one of the sadder points of the whole episode, is those kids that opted out, that opportunity is gone. It will likely never present itself again.
Yeah.
Especially for you guys that opted out, who are probably going to be either moving on to business or the NFL or wherever you're going. You had an opportunity with your teammates to go in and compete for an Orange Bowl against one of the top teams in the country.
Yep.
And it was going to be a tall task.
Yeah.
It was going to be a hard fought game, but you completely squandered that opportunity and it's gone forever. And so I hope that they end up not regretting that 10 years from now.
Well, but it also speaks to the mindset of, like, I get it, right? I mean, just based on the stats that you shared after they lost their quarterback, it's going to be an uphill battle against Georgia.
It was going to be tough.
But sometimes the ball bounces your way. But, I mean, could you imagine in a fighter squadron going, I'm probably going to lose today, so I'm just not going to show up.
I'm just not going to take off. Yeah.
You know, I'm probably going to lose today, so I think I'll just ground abort the jet.
Yeah. So 4VX, doesn't look good, Mav.
It doesn't look good, yeah. I mean, if I went into Sortis with that mentality, I would. You're never going to win, man.
You'd have half the hours that you have now.
My gosh.
Yeah, I mean, but that's great, man. And then something you said earlier was getting those wins helps, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's a big part
of belief.
That's a big part of building the culture. And if you're looking at a football team, man, if you go from a 3-10 season to a 5-6 season to a 8-3 and then to maybe a 13-0 or an 11-2, something like that, man, you are changing the way that this organization thinks about.
Yeah.
Like recruits, when you go talk to a recruit, those guys know that Georgia is going to be in the discussion at the end of the year.
Yep.
They know it. They know that Bama is going to, they know Ohio State, they know Michigan is going to be in the discussion somewhere. You know, now the X's and O's are going to play themselves out.
Right.
And, you know, maybe you end up with a Bama as a 2-loss team at number 5. Maybe you end up with Georgia losing the SEC championship by a field goal. But the guys going into that organization, they know what they're getting into, right? And the way that you said that about winning helps you build that process and build that mentality, this is exactly what I talk about on this podcast. You want to start creating momentum in your life. You want to start making life changes and self-improvement. Small victories, man.
They matter.
It's just the small stuff.
And,
you know,
to your point, it doesn't even have to be I get, you know, however many games, 13 games a season, and I need to change the trajectory of the wins over losses over the course of a couple years. Take it back to the fighter squadron, man. You got a young four-flug kid who's struggling. You know, a young guy who's going through the four-ship flight lead upgrade who's struggling. And you're in there with him, and you're debriefing, and you're like, look, man, next time you see this situation, you need to think about this. And then you go out there on the next day after he busts the ride and he sees the same situation and he thinks about X and he executes it and he wins.
Yeah.
And you come back and in the debrief you go, hey man, see?
Now do you believe?
See what happened? Right. Yeah. And so, and all of a sudden, they start to buy, okay, yeah, this works. You know, this, this tactical flow decision is a good one in this situation. And right, it doesn't take a lot. It's just those, like you're saying, it's those small little victories over time. And then all of a sudden, dude, you're just humming.
So I got a kind of a funny story. So here at Luke, we do a lot of FMS training, which means foreign nationals or foreign military sales is what it stands for. And so we have Norwegians, Italians, the Belgians are starting to show up. We've got Dutch and Dane. I mean, we got quite a few different people and cultures roving around the base over here. Well, this Norwegian guy, great dude. I've known him for a couple of years now. He's funny as shit. And so he's going through his IPUG. He comes over with, he's doing a TI sortie, tactical intercepts ride. And he's got these lines drawn out that he wants me to do for the red side, for his red air pictures. And when he handed them to me, I went, oh, I've seen these before. He goes, oh, have you? I said, yeah, these are WIC spin-up lines, which go into weapons school. We put these guys through a couple of sims, and it's really push it up.
Yeah, they're very robust.
It is really testing.
Having gone through WIC spin-up, I can tell you that it's not easy.
I mean, these lines are designed to make you fail so that you can figure out what to do better the next time, right? They are built so that you fail.
Yeah, and WIC is weapons instructor's course, for those that don't know. It's what you could go through at weapons school.
So he shows up with these lines, and I kind of looked at him, and then I looked at his IP, who's an old friend of mine, an old Strike Eagle guy, and I was like, this is probably not going to end well for you. And he goes, let's just go do it. Oh, by the way, they had two B Corps students.
Oh my gosh.
You're
set up for failure.
It's the self-licking ice cream cone of upgrades here. You got one instructor who's instructing an instructor, and then those two guys are going to write two grade sheets on these B courses, right? So they go out, and we ran three sets off the lines that he gave me. And I'm talking to the other IP, kind of the big eye, if you will. I'm talking to him on a back channel, and I go, dude, we need to dial this back a little bit, because these B courses aren't learning anything except how to die, you know? So we went back to basics, and we presented a couple of pictures that were winnable.
Yeah.
If you do the right tactics, you can win this picture, as opposed to the other ones where
they're designed
to make you die.
Yeah.
So the point is we gave both that IP and the B courses, we gave them an opportunity to win. We dialed it back enough down to their level where this should be winnable for you. They got a couple of pictures where, all right, man, we killed all the contacts. Like we're doing, nobody died here. We killed all the bad guys. Things are going good, right? Small victory. And then we start ramping it up a little bit from there, right? Same thing in your own life, man. Yeah. Same fucking thing in your personal day-to-day life. We just talked about it in the last podcast about if you want to build that momentum in your life, we were talking about the New Year's resolutions right up front. And this is why I think most of them fail, because people try to take too big of a bite of the apple.
Yeah.
Right. Start small, man. Go to the gym three times next week. Go for a walk a couple times a week. You know, it's shitty and rainy outside, but I'm going to go for my walk when I leave here. And because that's on my list of things to do. So get those small victories for yourself, start to build that momentum, and then build off of that.
Yeah. Yeah, because change is incremental, but you'll see it over time. So you also have to be patient in that process, because you're not going to, when you show up, you know, again, just to go back to the F-16 analogy or a B course analogy, you show up to the B course, you don't have any fucking clue what you're doing. You haven't been taught tactics. You haven't been taught really how to do basic fighter maneuvers, air combat maneuvering. You haven't been taught any of that stuff, right? And guess what? When you leave the B course, you still suck at it for the most part. You do, right? It takes a good 6 to 9 months, you know, to a year, year and a half, depending on, you know, how fast you can absorb it and just some baseline skill level, until you get to a place where you can be really comfortable and, you know, your situational awareness bubble grows to the point that you kind of, on a flow, you kind of know what's coming next, and you kind of build that internal time clock. Those things take time. And my point in saying that is just, you gotta be patient with it, these things in the process, because it's not something you're going to master in a week or two weeks. You know, it takes a couple months to change a habit.
It does.
Or to build a habit.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you got to start somewhere too.
But you got
to
start.
And you know, I gave that example of the lady I was talking to that was thinking about starting 75 hard. That's a pretty big bite of the apple, man, if you're not used to those things already.
Yeah.
You know, if you're accustomed to going to the gym, if you're accustomed to sticking to a diet and just small things like that, then you can get through it. But to go into it completely cold.
Yeah.
It's hard, man. It takes a tremendous amount of self-discipline. Ask me how I know.
Yeah.
But I want to go back to just one thing real quick. We were talking about just the different mindsets and the cultures and how they communicate those cultures. Go watch the Nick Saban presser after he lost the Rose Bowl. And man, that was a tense game. It was so good. If you haven't been to the Rose Bowl, you need to go.
Yeah.
You need to go at least once. Cause you know, you hear all the hype on TV about it being the granddaddy of them all and everything. Dude, it was so epic. Just being there. There's not a bad seat in that place. It's a smaller venue. Every seat is awesome. It was great. And by the way, the B2, kudos to you guys. You nailed the flyover. It was great. Anyways, so I'm watching the presser for Nick Saban's presser afterwards, and he led off much like Kirby Smart did. He was congratulatory to Michigan first and foremost. You know, you guys played a great game. They're, you know, great players. They're well coached. You guys deserved it. It was awesome. You know, congratulations and good luck in the national championship. Congratulations to the Rose Bowl. What a great venue. You know, we were very blessed to be here. He was very grateful and humble about the whole thing. And then somebody asked him about, well, they basically asked him, well, why'd you lose the damn game? And he goes, look, we came out onto the field. We had three plays. We came out on the field and we had a really good look on that play. Michigan calls timeout because they probably noticed it. So we go to play number two. We come out of the timeout and they had a really good look. Our look wasn't great. So we call timeout. So we go to play number three and we just didn't freaking execute it. They came with a Sam Will blitz and we were trying to run up the middle and trap a lineman. And it didn't work. And it was just like that. It was very objective.
Well,
and
yeah.
You know, he says, you know, you look at a game like
sometimes
this.
Sometimes it doesn't work.
60 minutes, you know, we got them stopped on fourth and two, and the inside or the outside linebacker who has the assignment of running back out of the backfield on a pass play, and it's a play action. He takes two steps inside and allowed that guy to get outside, like allows the running back to get outside on a flare pass, and they pick up like 30 yards on a fourth and two. Well, let's pretend just for a second that he still gets even the first down. Maybe you don't even stop him on fourth and two, and then the game's over. You just kneel it out after that. You stop him on fourth, or you let him get a first down on fourth and two, and they get 3 or 5 yards. It's a completely different ball game
totally
at that point.
Game,
it's a totally
yeah.
different ball game because now they're still down on like the 35-yard line, and they got to earn their way up the field, right? But you give them this giant chunk play, and there's so many. There's probably three or four of those type of plays that, I mean, if the coin flips a different way, we're looking at Bama and Washington
yeah.
in the national championship. But then you go and you listen to him debrief himself on it, and he's like, yeah, we just dorked it up, man.
Yeah.
It's very simple, very objective. You can look at it and go, yeah, they brought a blitz, we didn't handle it well, and we got tackled.
Yeah.
That's it. And there was no pissing and moaning. There was no whining. He said, yeah, all of our players, there's a lot of disappointment in that locker room.
Yeah.
Everybody's disappointed, a lot of tears. I told the team how proud I was of them. We competed our asses off, but it came down to a couple plays.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good, man.
So that was kind of my point was.
Well, and that's true to life, right?
Exactly. Getting back into how do you take all that shit and go be one, change one on it? And we talk about continuous self-improvement. Be 1% better every day, you know, all this kind of stuff, self-inspection, self-improvement, all this crap. That's how you do it, man.
Yeah, it is.
You have to objectively look at yourself in the mirror and say, I won or I lost. And if you lost, you figure out why. If you won, you ask yourself, is there anything I could have done better?
Yeah.
To make myself win harder. Like, yeah. I don't want to just win by 50. I want to win by 100.
Well, how do I overcome the next obstacle?
Or that's right.
What's the challenge yeah. that I take on next?
If you can start doing that, again, self-awareness, self-inspection. If you can just get in the habit of doing that every day, then you'll start to pick out these little things that you can start to make changes.
Yep.
You know, maybe you adjust your morning routine so you get out the house 5 minutes earlier in the morning and you got time to kind of slow walk into work or have another cup of coffee or whatever it is, man. You can find those little pieces of your life that you can make better if you're just honest with yourself and objective about it.
Yeah. And the other piece of that too, is when you start to figure those things out, be intentional. So if we want to take it to a college or a football example too, right? When you have really, you know, let's say you play Sunday, so maybe Monday's a day off and then you get Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, really, right?
Yeah.
And then Friday's a travel day, Saturday's play gate. So you have probably 3 or 4 days to get ready for the next team.
Yeah.
You have to be intentional about every minute of those days.
Like the Georgia player said, everything matters.
Everything matters, yeah. Right? You have to be super intentional about what you're doing with every minute and every opportunity yeah. that you have in that time frame to get the result that you want yeah. on Saturday. So
you're 100% right, man. And for the listeners, right? Dude, we're not saying that, you know, go bury your head in the sand and focus on all these things and all that stuff. Life happens, all right? We're just normal people out here. None of us are getting paid billions of dollars to go play a sport where that's all I focus on. And yeah. This is real life, man. And I'm married. I got kids. I got a house. I got a mortgage. I mean, I got shit going on in my life. Like when I leave here, as soon as I leave here, I'm going to fix a sink faucet at one of my rental properties. Yeah. I mean, you know, life happens, dude. Yeah. And it's pouring down rain outside and it's cold. I don't want to go work out outside when it's pouring down rain and cold, but you have to develop this mindset. And I go back to the champion's mindset of desire and discipline and commitment. So commit to these things that you're going to do. Like you said, be intentional about it. When you commit to something like that, then it automatically elevates. And like I use Katie as an example, when she did her first round of 75 hard, she committed to it. And she says, I will not fail. Dude, that is an excellent mindset. Now you have to back that up with the discipline and the desire.
Yeah. Right?
That desire is your passion. And her passion, she was driven by a couple of things. She wanted to achieve a couple of goals, and that's where her desire came from. And then she had to execute the discipline every day to win.
To walk through that program.
And I've had so many people ask me about this and ask me about how'd you get through it, how'd you do it, and you know, what is it? Da da da. So many questions, I answer them all the same way. Is all you have to do is win one day, 75 times.
Yeah.
That's it. You have to win one day. I got to win today. What happened yesterday doesn't fucking matter. Tomorrow's not even here yet. I'm not even focused on that. I have to win today. And before I go to bed tonight, I'll look at how I'm going to win tomorrow. And then I have to do that 75 times. That's it.
No, that's important. I mean, what you're talking about is being present in the moment, right?
That's right.
And not worrying about what happened in the past and not focusing on what may happen in the future, but what are the things that I control right now in this moment? What are the decisions that I have to make and how do I win this moment?
That's
what
right.
you focus on.
That's right. The first round that I did, I was doing it by myself, and it was during the middle, it was in football season. Caleb was playing his senior year of football, right? So Friday nights, we're going out to the football field. Well, I had set an eat window. I was doing intermittent fasting was my diet that I was doing. I'd set an eat window from 12 to 7. So I had a 7-hour, I was doing a 7:17 fast and eat kind of thing. We got to the football game that started at 7 o'clock, and I realized I didn't bring anything to eat. So we're sitting in the stands at like 6:30, 6:45, and I'm like, fuck, I didn't bring any dinner. I didn't bring a sandwich. I didn't bring anything. So my last meal was at like 2 o'clock that afternoon, and I had to wait until noon the next day. Guess what? I chalked it up as a lesson learned. And the next football game, I had a couple of ham and cheese wraps in my bag, you know? So that's how you do this, man. It's an iterative process. And you're going to fuck things up and you're going to fail, and that's okay. Learn from it and bring your sandwich with you the next time.
Yeah, no doubt. No, that's all good, brother.
Cool, dude.
What else you got, man? I think this was a good conversation. Kind of ties back, like you've always said, it's a big old knot. It ties back to a lot of things and is very relevant for the time that we're in. Go Dogs.
Yeah. Good luck.
Excited for the Huskies.
I have to root for Washington on this one because I can't pull for Michigan after they just beat
Bama. Root for anybody that is playing against Harbaugh.
You know, his season, I would have liked to seen Bama win because I'm a Bama fan, but also there's a subcomponent of that. His season has not been smooth.
Yeah.
You know, they were rife with controversy.
Yeah, they were.
Scandal and penalties and all kinds of stuff. I mean, I think he was suspended for the first 3 games and then like the last 2 games or something like that.
Suspended
like,
for several games. I know, man, that.
Like that's not normal. Something's going on
with
there.
That cat.
So anyways, it should be a great game tomorrow night. I'm upset that I can't watch it real time, but should be a great game, and good luck to both teams.
Next week we got Integrity coming out. So that's going to be a really good episode. And then like we talked about, towards the end of last year, we got some guest speakers that are lined up that we're going to be getting that. So
certainly do. We got a busy spring coming up.
Yeah, so we got some good stuff ahead of you guys. So
man.
Thanks for listening, you guys.
All right. Be the one.
Be the change. Hey guys, one of the consistent topics we discuss on the Be One, Change One podcast is the importance of resiliency, seizing opportunities, and choosing courage over comfort to achieve what is important to you. So if you're an outdoorsman, we would encourage you to explore Sick Bear Outdoors.
That's right. Sick Bear believes in using the symbol of resilience to empower your outdoor adventures and to experience the wildness of life's trails. Sick Bear adopts the bear's approach by fearlessly embracing nature, standing your ground, and courageously facing challenges. Get out of your comfort zone at sickbear.com. That's SICBEAR.com. Visit sickbear.com for all of your individual and family hunting, fishing, or outdoor adventure needs. Thanks for flying with the Be One Change One podcast. If you got something out of this show, then be the one and share it in your circles of influence.
You can be our wingman through our website at www.beonechangeone.com. That's B and the number one, change and the number one.com.
We invite you to be the one and join our fighter squadron on social media at Be One Change One on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. You can follow us at Paul Roscoe White on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as Roscoe's website, www.paulroscoewhite.com.
You can email us from the website, and please leave comments, share, and ask questions, or leave ideas of things you would like to discuss on future podcasts. Most importantly, be the one that helps us win the algorithm by leaving a review on whatever platform you're listening on.
Thanks for joining. Until next time, be the one.